This is West Virginia Morning. I'm your host, Glennis Board. Earlier this week, we learned a little about the karst topography in our region. Calling on all geo nerds, this morning, we'll learn a little more.
People always have this attitude that springs with this magic gift to humankind that's just an open faucet to an infinite water supply, and that's just not the case.
That's coming up. This is West Virginia Morning. Former Vice President and presumptive Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden's new climate plan is drawing praise from organizations that work with coal communities on economic transition. As Brittany Patterson reports, union officials and industry groups are less pleased.
Biden's proposed $2 trillion plan frames decarbonizing the economy as a jobs creator. Under the proposal, by 2050, the U.S. would reach net zero carbon emissions largely by major investments in clean energy and infrastructure. The plan also has a strong focus on environmental justice, including supporting workers who may be displaced by a shift away from fossil fuels and investing in the Ohio Valley's coal communities. Peter Hilly is with MESED, which works with communities in eastern Kentucky facing economic transition.
I think it's really important that they're talking about both frontline and fence line communities. That's where we've really seen the hurt from the transition away from the old economy. So it makes sense to build the new economy in those places.
Biden's plan also drew some criticism regionally, including from the United Mine Workers of America. The union said the plan did not include enough specifics and could hurt already suffering coal communities. For the Ohio Valley Resource, I'm Brittany Patterson.
Earlier this week, we learned a little about the karst topography in our region. The karst formation dominates underground landscapes throughout special areas of our region, storing water in its caves and crevices. It's partly why this region is responsible for a big percentage of water resources, feeding springs and wells for thousands of miles. But as Robbie Harris tells us, human activity above ground is taking a toll on water resources below.
In many rural areas of Virginia, natural springs supply lucky landowners with drinking water in seemingly endless supply. But karst protection specialist Will Orndorff says it's not that simple.
People always have this attitude that springs are this magic gift to humankind that's just an open faucet to an infinite water supply, and that's just not the case.
If climate change brings more frequent storms and hotter summers, as predicted in models for the region, he says, water resources are going to change.
One of the things we anticipate as a result of climate change is that aquifer levels will be decreased.
Seems counterintuitive that more rain would deplete aquifers, but because warmer temperatures would extend the growing season, plants will take up more water. That means less water reaching the underground karst.
The net effect's going to be less water makes it to the cave, ergo less water makes it to the aquifer. So over time, we expect the rivers and streams and wells that are supported by the infiltration of water into karst is probably going to be decreased as a result of climate change.
Thanks to the karst formation, caves are abundant in Virginia.
Here we are. We're actually in the bottom of a sinkhole. This particular sinkhole is formed by the collapse of a cave. And we're going to go into the cave in a minute.
Orndorff explains that when you see a sinkhole, you can be pretty sure there's a cave below.
Hey, just watch, there's a hole here. So you want to kind of keep your butt up there and your feet over here. If you don't want to slip down the hole.
Definitely not.
There we go.
Wow. Thanks for pointing that out.
Sure.
After a lot of crouching and shimmying over gray-green mud with rocks blocking our way, we find ourselves in a large underground space with streams flowing throughout the cave. When you shine a light, you see small pebbles shimmering in the shallow water like a granite countertop. The karst terrain is fragile and changeable, the limestone and dolomite having been eroded by water since at least the Ice Age, leaving holes and cutouts in the rock. Orndorff calls it the Swiss cheese.
So Swiss cheese isn't just cheese and it's not just holes, right? It's the cheese with the holes. So that's what karst is. It's a landform top. Like a desert's not a mineral, a desert's not a rock, a desert is a landform. This room we're in right here, if you look at the wall in front of us, if we had a time machine and I was to be able to take you back here 10 years ago, you'd see about 600 little brown bats all in clusters up on the wall in front of you.
Millions of bats in this country have died due to white nose syndrome.
The bright spot of all that is that we don't have evidence that any of these bats have gone extinct yet. And here and there, we have populations that seem to be stable or increasing. But this cave has had nearly a 100% reduction in the number of bats.
There's a meter on the cave wall to check for bat activity. It's required for the Mountain Valley Natural Gas Pipeline that snakes through this area. Orndorff says the pipeline company has been careful to protect caves like this, in one case changing a proposed route over the Mount Tabor sinkhole area.
They're very cooperative. When there was a hole in the pipeline trench that was losing water into the ground, I didn't find out about that because I went out there. I found out about it because it was reported to me by people working for MVP.
Orndorff worries that the current halt to pipeline construction is not helping water quality because everything downstream will be affected by what happens above.
I mean, it gets kind of philosophical, yes. but I think from the perspective of how we interact with the natural landscape, my opinion is minimal perturbation of the natural landscape should be the goal.
If we were to lose our light down here in this cave, we wouldn't be able to see our hands in front of our face.
I don't think I've ever seen anything this dark.
But with the help of a seasoned guide who knows what he's doing, we easily make it back up to find a pristine winter white landscape as the sun begins to set. In Montgomery County, I'm Robbie Harris.
Denise Giardina is a highly regarded Appalachian author whose works include Storming Heaven and The Unquiet Earth. Both of those books are set in West Virginia in the coal fields and revolve around the miners' struggle with mine owners and the unions, including the Battle of Blair Mountain in 1921. In his new book about Giardina's work, called Heeding the Call, a study of Denise Giardina's novels, author William Joliffe explores the deep theological message in Giardina's works and how he believes her work should be regarded on a national level. Eric Douglas had a Zoom meeting with both Giardina and Joliffe to discuss the new book.
What's it like to have somebody write an entire book about you and your work?
Well, it's very weird because usually it doesn't happen until you're dead. And so I kept thinking as I was reading it, I am still alive, right? So that was kind of different. But it was also fun because I haven't read those books myself in some cases 30 years, you know. And in some cases, I used to do public readings and I had certain scenes that I liked to read because audiences seemed to respond to those. So I knew those parts really well, but then there were parts of the books that I've totally forgotten about. I guess if somebody takes enough time, first of all, to read every book you've written and then to write a book about it themselves, they must actually pretty much like it. I mean, usually when the opposite happens, it's usually somebody who is dead and who's famous and some writer decides they're going to take them down a peg or two. But in this case, I kind of went into it expecting that maybe he kind of likes my books, and he does. And even better, he understands them, I think, and he really puts a focus on them that needed to be made, which is that I get pigeonholed as a regional writer when in fact I'm a theological writer.
What does that mean to you?
That's the way I think. And everything I write comes from that theological perspective and that believing in God and all that that entails then morally and ethically and spiritually. And I say that without... Yeah, but yet, a lot of people don't understand that because, for example, my books would never be carried in a self-labeled Christian bookstore because there's too much sex and there's too much cussing
and violence.
But yet, they're deeply spiritual, I think, and deeply theological because those are the questions that interest me. Politics interests me. Certainly, the Appalachian region interests me, although not as much as people maybe realize. But the things that interest me are sin, redemption, forgiveness, love, fear of death, life after death, those kinds of things are the questions that interest me, and that's what the books are all about, every single one of them.
See, you're an English professor, right?
Yes, sir.
And you actually teach Denise's books as a, I don't know if it's a class itself or as a, or at least as part of one of your classes.
Yeah, I do both. I started teaching Storming Heaven because it was in an introductory kind of class where I'm trying to get students to engage with a culture very different from their own. And if you grew up, you know, in the Northwest, you know, Appalachian culture is very different. And so it was a great tool in that regard. Plus, of course, that faith element. I teach at a faith-affirming institution, so students are come in with more or less a willingness to look at some of those deep faith aspects. So I taught it there, Storming Heaven. And then I started using Unquiet Earth in my 20th Century American Literature Survey upper level course.
I kept flashing back to high school English classes where, you know, teachers were trying to tell us, well, this is what the author was thinking when they were writing this. Did he get it right? That's always the question. It's always the question every teenager has is, how do you know what the writer was thinking?
Yeah, and sometimes you don't. And in this case, I think he did get probably, I'd say 95, 96% right. Maybe 2 or 3% that was a little off. That if I sat down with him and talked to him about it, I could say, yeah, but, you know, but he really did get a lot of it right. And so I felt very, very good about that.
Who do you want to read the book?
I want it to be a help for students. You know, sort of the picture in my mind for the reader is someone who's far into literature, maybe a upper level undergrad or someone who's maybe starting their graduate studies. I wanted this to be sort of a jumping off point for what those students might think they should study and what they should write about. So there's that. I assumed it would find some kind of reception, whether positive or negative or critical, among people who do Appalachian studies. I mean, she's just really significant in that area. But for me, well, I shouldn't say the most important, but certainly always in my mind was the fact that there are a lot of folks who write about theology in literature or who write about religion in literature, whom I would really like to somehow put in contact with her work, because her handling of those aspects is on par with anybody and better than most. And while I like the idea that she's an Appalachian writer, I would like her work to enter into that bigger conversation of where people write about and study contemporary handlings of theology.
Is there anything else, though, that we haven't talked about that you want to mention?
Only that maybe I would say this. You know, I started studying her seriously because I was drawn to particular books. And I started teaching her because she fit very well in certain objectives that I had for my classes. But I can't state too broadly, really, or too richly, how much of a great experience it was to get this far into the mind of one great writer.
That was William Jolliffe and Denise Giardina speaking with Eric Douglas about the book Heeding the Call, a study of Denise Giardina's novels. It's available through West Virginia University Press. Jolliffe is currently the chair of the Department of Writing and Literature at George Fox University in Newburgh, Oregon. This interview is part of a series of interviews with authors from or writing about Appalachia. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with all the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Our news director is Andrea Billups. This morning, I'm your host, Glynis Board. This is West Virginia Morning.